the Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tom Lawrence, and Tony Bemis as the Beaver.
And this is episode 217.
Swag Sunday. Haven't been here for a while, have you, Tony?
I haven't.
That's right. It's Swag Sunday, and we're calling it that because we couldn't think of anything better, but mostly because we're all wearing swag.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've got my Nagios shirt, that long sleeve t-shirt I got at OLF this year. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, I'm wearing my HP hoodie that I got last year.
At OLF? Yeah.
At OLF. Mm-hmm. And I've got
our swag.
Our
shirt.
Yep. Yeah. And Tom, you came in with something.
Yeah, the TEDx Detroit swag.
Yeah, yeah. That was pretty. That's pretty cool. I'm just waiting for somebody to give pants away so I could like come in a full swag outfit. I mean, think about it. They could give in those little gym shorts or something. You know, those
something
cotton gym shorts, and then have their logo on it. That'd be cheaper than a t-shirt.
Yeah. No, I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, shirts are cheap because there's just mass quantities of them.
Yeah, shirts are really popular.
All right. Well, anyway. I don't think I'll ever have a full, complete swag outfit.
They should do like PJ pants, you know, and do.
Yes, I really want to see a bunch of Linux people in PJ pants. Well,
with Tux logos all over them.
With Tux logos.
There we go.
I picture a bunch of coders sitting around with t-shirts and comfortable pants on. And
I don't think they wear pants when they code.
Oh,
maybe that's just me. That's right.
We're going down the road. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll come right back to reality. Yeah. So, Tony, one of you guys whose name starts with a T.
Yes.
So
I wrote it down.
Yeah. So Tony, it's good to have you with us.
Yeah. Sorry, I missed it last time. I was out at my parents' house, which is
Kalamazoo, right?
Yeah, it's 150 miles away.
Home of the undefeated Western Michigan Broncos.
Yes, they are.
I went to that game on Friday night at Ford Field.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, I had free tickets.
Well.
The Lions organization was giving them away.
Nice. So. Yeah. And they live about 20 miles north of the Western campus.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, so all day Saturday, it snowed all day long, and we didn't get out on the road, so I just didn't want to risk driving 150 miles back.
On ice-slicked highways?
Yeah, or possible ice-slicked. So we just spent the night there.
We soldiered on, didn't we, Tom?
We pulled it off.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, we'd rather have you arrive safely than try to make it here for a crazy Sunday morning podcast.
Right.
So anyway, so what else? Anything, any techie things or open source activity that bears note?
Yeah, I figured, or I'm working on a couple Raspberry Pi projects. One's a Christmas gift, and a couple others are just little fun things on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought maybe we could talk about that a little bit in the next episode.
Oh,
for our fresh looks.
Oh, I'll be looking forward to that because I've had this idea of taking a bunch of music with me in my car, and I thought, you know, you power Raspberry Pis off your little phone chargers, which you can plug into the, the car. Well, I call it cigarette lighter, but, you know.
Right.
I think nowadays it's called something else. But anyway, you plug it into that and you don't even need, I guess you would need a little monitor to get to your songs. But what I would want to do is like bring up, a few thousand songs with me and just
there
see
is
if
actually
I could...
there is a project that just like that.
Is there?
I think they use it for
kind of turns it into a media player.
Yeah, media player, and all it is like a LCD display.
That's all you need.
It
used to be called. I know it was running XBMC, and it runs something else now.
Okay.
Raspbian. It's Pixel is Raspbian, but
I think they just had a. I think they just had a release. XBMC, new version.
Oh, right. I see.
Raspbian.
Yeah, but. They have something similar to that. And you have right, left buttons up, down for volume up, down and skip song to song kind of thing.
All right.
But, what's hard about a lot of these little projects like that. And I'd been thinking the same thing for a long time. I want this carputer. I want a carputer. Well, you know what? I have a computer that sits with me all the time.
Cody.
And
your phone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my phone. And it's so easy to get an old Android phone that somebody's either just sitting around or they throw in one of those giveaway boxes and just throw music on that and play it from there.
Oh.
And you have a full display and so much more you can do with it.
I just have, now I have a project for my Kyocera phone.
Yeah, exactly.
The one that's waterproof. Did I tell you I bought insurance for this phone now? After I had my second water incident with my phone, I've decided to pay $5 a month for insurance.
Mm. All right.
So, of course, now that means I'll never have another water incident. But anyway, thank you for that. That's a great idea because that phone is just sitting in my desk drawer.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're just so much easier to mm-hmm. use the phones. Some of the phones, if you get the right one, you can even hook up external displays to them. Mm-hmm. Like I know my Samsung, I had an S3 and an S5. Mm-hmm. They both, you can plug in HDMI to it. Can, like, if you want to play a movie for the kids in the back or something, as long as the screen takes HDMI,
mm-hmm.
then
that's neat.
You can play it right off the phone and mm-hmm. it plays on the TVs behind you.
Okay. Oh, good. You know, I still have my Samsung Galaxy S3 back in the days when Samsung phones didn't ignite.
Right.
What I use that for now is just simply, I subscribe to DI.fm, which is digitally imported. It's all electronic music and various types. And so I just simply, stream that to an old retro looking radio that has, Bluetooth. So it's really cool. So this really cool music comes out of this old retro radio. So, anyway, but. So back to your project, since we went off on that tangent, you were talking about your Raspberry Pi project?
Yeah. Yeah. I figured, I didn't want to spend a whole lot of time right now on it. We can about.
That's right. You're going to talk about it next episode. Cool.
But yeah, it's one's a gift, a Christmas gift, and the other two are just things I'm messing around with.
Cool. So, all right. Yeah. Good.
So what'd you do the last couple weeks, Tom?
What did I do?
Yeah, Tom.
Well, let me clear my throat. Let's get going on this. Well, we finished the Bridge project. Well, we got one more test to do, and we call it the Bridge project because
Bridge.
The Bridge. And
you're bridging a bridge.
We bridged a bridge. Mm. So in the infinite weird things that go on, there's a client of ours that owns a bridge. Not my room, but he's the only other guy in Michigan who owns a bridge to a public roadway.
Yeah, you're like, hey. Say, Matty Maroon?
Yeah.
The most evil man in Michigan.
Wyandotte Bridge?
Yeah, yes, the one in he owns the Gros Eel Bridge.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Gros Eel. Yep. And Gros Eel, for folks who aren't familiar with it, is an island that is in the Detroit River.
Yes. And it's where all the rich people live. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so there's
you can tell because those words end with E. That gross, G-R-O-S-S-E,
yeah.
And then eel, I-L-E,
and the mansions on the house are pretty outstanding.
Yeah, that's true. That's a dead giveaway.
It's a dead giveaway. Anyways, what they've done is, in the weird things that go on is because of the way Detroit is, where some cities have fun things like waterfront houses for the river, we don't do that in Detroit. We have industrial fronts. So because it's all an industrial front, there's no internet on the waterfront side on – not the island, but on the
mainland.
On the mainland. Mm. So there's no internet on the mainland. They only can get really crappy 5 meg DSL. That's the fastest they have. They need faster internet because mm-hmm. the bridge has, internet needs, including running the toll server machines. And they're really running the bandwidth restrictions. And it's a pain for us because when we remote support them, it's also a pain. Mm-hmm. Now, what makes this bridge unique is also the fact that it's a pivoting bridge. It's really old. It was built in 1908. So it's got a pivot and spin, which means we can't just run wires across the bridge.
Because
it pivots and spins.
Sure.
To let people through the channel. So
are there any overhead spans or anything like that?
There's no overhead span either. It's just too high. And it's really it's a unique design, and because there's houses up there, they can't really put poles in. So the whole project
cable into the river.
There is. They have fiber optics running on the river. This is where it gets weird. So there's no internet on the mainland. There's internet on the island. And there's internet on the island because they use a directional bore and put in fiber optics, Comcast did, that go under the water. Now, those have no poles, so we can't reuse it. It's also 2 kilometers, a kilometer across. So it's a pretty good distance.
Yeah.
So
close to half a mile.
What's that, about a half mile?
About a half mile. Yeah.
Sorry.
No, you're right. So we can't go under the bridge either, and there's no wires going there. There's only fiber optic cables. So it's really funny. The fiber optic goes under the bridge, goes over there, goes to the Comcast NOC, and then we broadcast it back across the bridge with a wireless bridge. So we set up
– and the knee bones connected to them.
Yeah. So we put one on the island side, which doesn't have anything. So there's a box. Anyone who follows me on Facebook or whatnot has probably seen my box I posted. We bolted a box, and you had to get an address for the box. So the box has an address now because Comcast has to install to an address. So he owns the property that the bridge has to, but there's no buildings at all.
Okay.
But there is electricity. So we ran the electricity, bolted up a box, and have the box has an address on it.
You know, Tom, this is true out-of-the-box thinking. I just want to compliment you.
So we mounted all the
– Oh, wait. It's in the box.
No. Yeah. So we mounted all the equipment inside the box, and then we went up on and put a pole up to broadcast across the bridge, and it broadcasts over to the barge that's floating in the water because that's actually where they work out of is a barge. I don't know why. I've never asked that question.
The part that it pivots on is a barge?
Nope. Though they have a barge on the land side docked there, and they use it as their office, and I never asked why.
Hmm.
I guess it's cheaper to get a barge with an office on it than it is to build
a
building on it.
So they can move quickly.
Yeah. I've never really asked why a barge.
So they can move to Canada just in case. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm not going to go there anymore.
Just in case. They could just undock and float down a river.
Yeah, because for people who don't know, on the other side of the Detroit River is Canada.
Yes.
So I live – I live about 7 miles from Canada if you drew a straight line.
Yeah. We all live really close, which creates all kinds of issues. So anyways, we put the bridging unit on there. The only thing we have to do is test it on Monday because I haven't had a chance to test it. So because it works, but it's not switched over from their AT&T because we have to contact their credit card company to switch it. We got to do a pivot test. So we did a speed test and we're getting full speed across the channel, but we don't know if the bridge is going to block any of the speed. So we got to actually pivot the bridge. So, but I have to go there at certain times because they don't want to pivot it unless they have to during rush hour. Mm-hmm. So I got to go there off hours and have them pivot it when it's not busy.
Like about midnight?
Yeah, something like that. So
isn't there a schedule like when a boat comes through that
they have the schedules there, and I can look at the schedule and just show up then.
Well, wait a minute. When boats come through, I mean, there's the other side of the island between Canada and the island. Don't the big boats go down that way?
And the reason why is because the coal plant – and I asked the same question because I'm like – I looked at it on a map and go, you know, there's two – you can go around this island. And they're like, yeah, you could. But the reason they don't is because there's all those docks and it takes so much power to go past it. I think that someone told me it's something like, you know, so many $1,000 in fuel. So there's a couple loading docks where they are loading up all the materials because once again, it's industrial for the steel companies. So they load up down there. So for them to actually go past the island and then work upstream in the channel backwards to then go to the dock is very, very costly. So they just have them spin the bridge.
All right. Well, certainly covers it.
Yep. So that's the bridge project. It's the wireless bridge that crosses a bridge that brings not internet from the mainland to the island, but from the island to the mainland after it starts over there. So that's that. I did some more PSN stuff that I posted on my YouTube channel, which included a deeper look at a new feature in the new version of PSN called NTOP PNG, which is a really cool network tool to visualize all your traffic and nail things down. It's really neat. And I reviewed a new PFSense box that's out there for they have a couple of them now. But they have a new their company, I can't really, they're called like Protect Deli or something, but they started making PFSense boxes. And you can buy these fairly high spec ones for a few $100 and have like four network ports on them and passively cooled.
And what do they run?
About $279. No. Which is
what OS? I should have said what OS? Yeah,
PFSense.
Right, and that's based on?
BSD.
There you go. Yes. Okay, I had to get that little plug in there.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting though, Tom.
Yeah, they're pretty neat. So I did I've been really focusing on a lot more reviews of that type of stuff because people have been asking questions, and so I've gotten in-depth that I'm preparing for. Mm-hmm. My next in-depth thing is going to be Caden Live.
Oh.
I've been working – there's a guy I want to say if you look up Tux Designer, you can find him. He's got a great YouTube channel. He's been doing a lot of individual videos, which I think is great.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to do one really strong in-depth one. And but I've been learning new features from him too. He's definitely got some neat features that he's been doing with the Caden Live.
With Caden Live?
And, of course, we're using that to edit our podcasts and everything. Mm-hmm. So I started making a video on that.
So you're a believer.
I'm a believer. Mm-hmm. I'm pushing the limits of it. Because some people have seen the end products I've done with it, and they're like, that's how much work went into that. And I'm like, a lot.
Wow.
Six hours on one video I did.
Did you have to save frequently?
Yeah. I got to admit, though, this latest version does not hardly crash. I have so few problems with it I'm really happy. Like, good. They've done so much good with the code and made it such a great solid product now. Never had a problem editing podcasts. Minor problems when I'm editing videos, and mostly I know how to work around them. One of them is, if you drag something in the wrong spot, it just becomes uneditable for no reason, mm-hmm. but you can save it, close it, or just reopen a project and it works fine.
Okay.
So it's annoyances, but from my understanding, even some of the other video programs have those type of little things.
When you think about the complexity of video editing,
it is.
I mean, that there's a lot of stuff going on in the background. And now I haven't used Caden Live recently, but I've got my Iceland pictures and I got my home tour stuff I want to put into a movie. I'm going to be thinking more about that when and if it crashes, so I don't, have a meltdown.
They've added much better support for GPU mm-hmm. rendering, and it works on my laptop with the GPU for my laptop. Mm-hmm. It has trouble working because we were building some really high-end systems at my office, and so we wanted to try the GPU rendering on a $450 video card. And it turns out
NVIDIA?
Yeah, one of the NVIDIA mm-hmm. gaming cards. And it's really fast, even had 4K, but it does crash a lot on 4K, and I don't know why. If I turned off the GPU rendering, it works fine.
Hmm.
So apparently there's still some work to be done in that. But overall, the project's, it's got to be my favorite Linux video editor. And I've tried the other ones. They just don't have the robustness, the features, and the, the fact that I've used it for so long probably makes me a little biased.
I don't edit videos, but if I did, I'd use Caden Live.
So,
all right.
Yeah, that's most of my catch up is you can find it all on YouTube. Oh, and I built a gaming system, so I'll have that video done in a couple soon.
Oh, yeah. We were talking about that. Was it last time we got together?
Yeah, I decided.
How many games do you have on there? How many thousand?
Oh, no, not that gaming system. That's my Raspberry Pi one. So I have the Raspberry Pi, the Retro Pi. That project's done and documented, which is fun. Got a lot of views on that video. And then, also I'm an idiot. I didn't know what a couple of buttons did, and I said that in the video because I'm honest. I don't know what this button does. And
I'm going to press it. Did you save whatever it was first?
And it's funny because someone pointed out, just said, "How did you not know that?" And they explained what it did. I'm like, I don't know. There's like a knowledge gap. I can build the entire thing, but didn't know you could press down. Well, as it is on the Xbox controllers, the little thumb parts, you can press in on them. I didn't know this. I only thought you could do that on PlayStation controllers. And people are like, Tom, how do you not know? I'm like, because I'm not much of a gamer.
Right.
Yeah.
I actually built myself a gaming system, so that's a whole nother.
Very cool.
Yeah. We'll do a debriefing on it.
Is it portable?
No. I built a monster, spent way too much money.
You should invite us over. You know what we should do?
You guys
do
can come over.
We should, we could have a... Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll just invite ourselves over to your house.
Absolutely.
Tell your wife.
Hey, we have a big table. You know, I've got a 12 person table at my house.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
That's not with a leaf in it. It doesn't extend. It's custom made.
All right. Well, it sounds like you were busy anyway.
Yeah. I was having fun.
Okay.
So Mary, what have you done?
Well, I actually ordered, there was a sale on Roku.
Yeah.
I ordered two of them.
Hey.
So, cool. Yeah, it was like 35 bucks each. Mm-hmm. For the Roku streaming stick. So I installed those, and the remote, of course, has got voice capability, which bothers me because I think, who can turn that on?
Right.
Anyway, I just thought, well, all I have to do is just remove the battery and it won't, Anyway, but that, we're not going to go down my tinfoil hat side of my personality. But anyway, I got that set up. I already had Sling TV because I cut the cable cord earlier this year. So got Sling TV, Netflix all hooked up. It works really well. I'm digging it. The other thing I did is I upgraded my, Zorizon Limbo workstation to Kubuntu 16.10 because it was set when I bought it, it was set to the long-term support, which was the April, or 16.04.
Yeah.
So I went ahead and decided that I was going to not just stick to the long-term support series, that I wanted to get October because I figured, hey, it's December. I think they've got all the bugs worked out. So I did that. I also am taking more of a look at TrueOS, which I'm running on my desktop here, which, of course, is the successor to PCBSD.
Yeah, it looks nice.
Yeah, it's all right. There's the underpinnings are very solid, but the Lumina desktop, I think, still has some. And I'm going to write up a review on this. And I'm also going to be giving that review to the BSD user group, I think, in February. So
I can tell you're on wireless. The last, like, four times you came in with your PCBSD laptop, Mm-hmm. You couldn't get connected to the wireless.
That was
here.
Ghost. Yeah, it was Ghost BSD.
Oh, it was Ghost.
Yeah, it was Ghost BSD. There was a problem. I don't know why, because I could do it at home. So I'm not sure what the problem was exactly. But anyway, yeah. So I was able to get on it here without a.
I think the problem starts with a B, and then maybe an S and a D in there.
Yes. That's not nice.
I don't. My Linux laptop had no problems connecting.
Okay. Okay. But anyway, so yeah, so that's something I've been working on, and. You know, getting ready for the holidays.
All right.
Buying myself presents. Yeah. It's terrible. I go out on Black Friday and I just buy myself stuff. Well, you know, you have to start taking care of yourself first before you can take care of others.
Yes.
That's right. How I look at it. So
I've heard that theory.
Yeah. So anyway,
I got Christmas lights up. I finally got the last segment of like around my garage done mm-hmm. yesterday. But I still have like a wreath and a couple of other things to put up.
Okay. I got my tree up.
All right.
There's nothing on it. And I'm hosting a little party this afternoon.
Uh-oh. So you can be busy after the show?
Yeah, we'll be. I have to run home. I'll probably throw something on it. But anyway. But the house smells like pine, so it smells very festive.
I like that smell.
I do, too. I do, too.
That smells like holidays to me.
It does. It really does. So anyway, but that's that pretty much is it for me.
All right.
So I guess we're going on to listener feedback.
We want to hear from you. Call 734-258-7009 or email show@smlr.us with your feedback and questions.
All right. So we got a few things in. I know.
Thanks for tracking that, Tony. You know what that means.
I can address the because I emailed him back. I can address the one from Sean.
All right.
So thank you, Sean, for us being your favorite podcast. And he does point out we're not the only Linux podcast, but we're his favorite, which is wonderful.
We appreciate that.
Yes. I love being someone's favorite. Anyways, the bottom line was after he talked a little bit about our shows is about the Pine Book. And if you haven't heard about this, I think it's like another Kickstarter campaign mm-hmm. To build a $100 laptop. And it's really interesting. He says, do you think the Pine Book is the coolest thing ever? And will it disrupt the market in wonderful ways? I think it's pretty neat. I think that low powered laptops are going to become more popular. I don't know if they're really market disrupting, but they're definitely cool. But the Chromebooks have really come that way. I think next to the Chromebooks, a lot of people have modified them to run Linux. So they're a little bit more of a market disruptor. Do you fear that it does? Compatible distros are sluggish and it will leave a bad taste in new Linux users' mouth. Yes, that's actually one of those things. People who try to run computers on old Linux distros, they're like, oh, I'll just use this. The reality is the processing power needed to render, let's just say, Facebook.com, and we know a lot of people that get on there and they can go to their favorite websites. It renders super slow. You go to CNN.com or any of the news sites, Huffington Post especially, they take some CPU power to run.
Right.
And so if you have an older computer, great, it runs the distro fine. You can use the file manager fine.
How does it do on Breitbart? Hey, I'm just trying to get equal coverage for everybody.
If you survive the pop-ups, the same problem. And the complexity of HTML5 and the complexity of websites really means you need processing power to run mm-hmm. websites because that's mostly what people do now. They want to go, I want an internet surfing box that's safe and secure, so I want to run Linux. All those are great things. But even, you know, I have a Chromebook with the Intel Bay Trail Celeron. You know, it's a newer one, and it's really sluggish on some of those websites. You have to watch. So even YouTube, on my Chromebook the plugin disabled for my YouTube plugin that I use for helping edit YouTube videos because it won't render properly in a Chromebook. Every page, just opening a YouTube takes about 20 seconds if I have that plugin turned on.
Oh my goodness.
So – just clicking on the next video, there's a 20-second delay before it opens up. So, mm-hmm. But, of course, my quad-core i7 laptop just renders it instantly, and it's no thought to it. So,
yeah, exactly.
Wow. That's why I'm never a person who says, oh, you have an old laptop? Don't retire it. Grab a Linux distribution. You're going to be so unhappy if that's your goal. And we know because we deal with end users all the time, because the problem lies in Windows as well, of course. Once it comes down to raw processing power, it's not the underlying OS that's holding you back. You just don't have the raw processing power for these more complicated websites.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they've showed you can run an entire operating system based on HTML5. So they've gotten really in depth with the abilities and capabilities of rendering.
Right. And the problem isn't that Linux won't run on the machines. Linux will run great on those machines. It's just the functional things that your average person does today is uses a lot more processing power, like going to these websites you're talking about.
Right. And he also talks about why can't the distro creators make a distro that runs like Wind on an SBC? The SBCs seem to be roughly perform like a Pentium 4. And that's kind of the same problem like we're talking about. So it's kind of 1, 2, and 3 are kind of addressed. Now, the other comment I gave back to him was Allwinner is the person – is the company behind it, the Chinese company. Allwinner is the ones producing the Pinebook. And what I had sent to him an email was, if you recall, about 2 or 3 episodes ago, we talked about Allwinner because they were shipping backdoors into their system that they said, oh, we forgot to take that out of the kernel in the version we shipped.
Right.
So Allwinner is of dubious things.
I never believe those statements.
Yeah, they – exactly. And they're also known GPL violators for not providing all the code for some of the things that they've done with their chips. Allwinner is also well known for a lot of the dirt cheap IoT devices and things like that. So they're a big chip manufacturer, but because they've had a not great open history. And the other scary thing, a Pinebook has lots of non-open source portions of it. Mm-hmm. So we don't know what's in there. So that makes me a little bit nervous. But I think the concept is there. I think another company will come out with one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, devices are getting better. So we may see some essentially stripped down hardware like the Chromebook that actually comes unlocked and open out of the box so we can run it with a Linux distribution. So I hope it does push that forward, because I'd like to have that, because it does work for people to have maybe not $100, but a few $100 one that would actually render a web page decently. I'm shocked the Chromebook that runs the ARM, because ARM being more efficient, Asus makes them. They call them the Chromebook Flip ones. They run really well with ARM.
The Chromebook what?
They call the Chromebook Flip. It's one my wife has.
Oh, okay.
And it works really well with ARM.
It
turns into a tablet. And it runs, because it's ARM, it runs Android apps and it runs Chrome OS simultaneously. And because Memory Sheet, they put enough memory on it to do both. So I think we're going to see more of those devices in the market. I think they're going to get better.
I agree.
Hopefully that answers all of his questions.
Right.
Wow, that looks pretty nice. Wow, that's not very expensive at all. How much onboard storage does it have?
Hardly any. But okay. Think about that. How much do you need?
Well, yeah, if you're doing everything cloud-based.
But what happens if you lose your internet? You have nothing.
Yeah.
You can't even work on stuff.
I lose my internet. I don't then do anything.
Right. The target audience of what they're looking to go for is people getting on the internet and doing things for surfing Facebook or reading their email.
And that really is what we're seeing the end users doing, is they just go on there. Like even the card games, the older people that come into our retail store, mm-hmm. a lot of them, they want to play Euchre, but it's not like before. They wanted to just play it with a computer. They play with several friends, which is pretty cool. They have a chat window. And the same thing, that's actually what they're running into, is their older computers not being able to play it because it's run in HTML5 or a heavy Java engine on a website. And they like the interactivity for it because it's not just playing some computer game. They can buy some $5 device for that. So it's pretty neat. I think we're going to start seeing more of this. It's definitely neat.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I just looked it up, actually. It does look pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I suppose I could always go to my – I could always surf to Dropbox and download something. I have PDF magazines and books stored there, so I could download that if I wanted.
My wife just plays silly touch games and stuff, so it works great for
her. It's a touch screen.
Yeah,
of course, if it flips to a tablet, it would be. Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. What else do we have, Tony, besides some Japanese spam?
Right. We had Japanese spam.
Did you put that into Google Translate to see what
it
said?
I did.
I was going to, then I forgot.
Japanese spam is as foreign to me as Japan is itself. I mean, I read it. I'm like, I don't get it.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense because it goes into, I plan to go skiing. And then the next, all it is commas between. There's no end of the sentence. And then the forecast will be warm in the lakes. So you can't ski if it's going to be warm in a lake. Yeah. And then the next sentence is something about Microsoft Office 2016. Mm-hmm. And then I think they figured out that if they jump between subjects, then it doesn't spit off the spam alerts.
Maybe that's it.
But it just makes no sense. So what's the point of even sending it?
Yeah. I don't because even it's not a matter of a language barrier. It's the fact that they're trying to say, like, I don't go skiing because it's warm. Okay, I get that. So you're trying to bypass the spam. But it doesn't really have a link to buy anything in it.
Right.
Yeah, I've seen those. It's almost as if they're testing.
Am I correct? There was no link in that one, right?
Yeah, there was no link.
Yeah. So it doesn't have anywhere I can go to find out more. Like, I can't even link.
To find out more about that spam.
Well, someone
to buy those pills.
Well, no, someone did a project on that. Yeah. They wanted to see what happened if you click through and actually tried to buy things on spam. And mm-hmm. they found that most of the time they could not process a credit card. They would not send a product because they wouldn't even process a transaction. So it made it even more confusing. Like, okay, they sent the spam link. We followed the link. We tried to buy it. Their checkout is broken on their website, or this is broken. Mm. So they could not finish a transaction. So they actually started replying to it, and they couldn't get a hold of anyone. They actually had a really small percentage of the spam that they received they were able to actually follow through on, which became a really fascinating – it's some article, I think, in Wired.
You know, yeah. I bet it's – there's something related that a few years ago they figured out that the spam problem that you can't stop it because just the way because the internet works.
Anybody and it doesn't can send cost an email, anything.
Right. It doesn't cost anything. So the idea behind it was to the people that are legitimately bad spam, like these things, that if they can stop the funds, you know, or stop their finances, then maybe they can stop the spam. And so maybe that's part of it is that they're trying to stop the credit cards from working.
But there might be some lonely people who look forward to their spam. Who knows?
Well, it's the same thing. It could be that there's just broken spam servers still working. Because mm-hmm. when you look back, the NIMDA virus, which is from 2001, is still out there sending signals.
Mm.
It doesn't, in fact, it's
15 years ago.
15 years ago. So those 15-year-old servers have still not died. They're sitting in a closet somewhere still sending out the virus.
Jeez.
That's anyway, sad.
We had another feedback from Melvin. And Melvin says, this is on the 23rd. And he says, maybe you guys can review the first 64-bit Linux distro or NIX distro, you know, Star NIX.
Okay.
For Raspberry Pi 3. And that is the SUSE for Raspberry Pi.
Oh, I saw that was coming. The Raspberry Pi 3, is that available?
Yeah. It is. Yep. That's so we'd have one of my projects is based on the Pi 3. Yep.
Oh, you have Pi 3.
Yeah. And it's
I don't have one. I should get
quad core with a gig of RAM. And it actually runs really nice.
Yeah. It's got built in Bluetooth.
What is it? $35?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Built in Bluetooth and.
Where did you get it?
Micro Center.
Okay.
You can buy them online on Amazon for the same price.
Actually,
I used to go to not Newegg, but Element 14 or something.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Level 42.
Level 42.
The day I went, I don't know if it was a special they were running, but I got the Pi for $29.
Oh, cool.
So it was like $6 off.
Dang, that's good.
Yeah.
Huh.
They're pretty neat.
So anyway, getting back to the original question. So there's some interest in maybe doing a review of SUSE.
Yeah, SUSE on Raspberry 3.
For the Raspberry Pi.
Raspberry Pi 3. Yeah.
I think that would be interesting.
Yeah, we might take a look at that.
I think we should. I think because, we should do that.
Because
it's not Ubuntu based.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the Raspberry Pi.
For that reason alone.
The Raspberry Pi has HDMI out, so you can actually hook it up to, you know, pretty much any modern monitor with an HDMI and run it.
Even DVI.
You can DVI adapter
from HDMI to DVI.
So yeah, it's not hard to hook up, and they're really neat.
Okay.
Something people have been using Raspberry Pis for is displays. They'll tape them to the back of a TV at a business, and what they'll do is they're setting up dashboards on them. One of my clients is doing this. They have a programming team, and they just write stuff to go to the Raspberry Pi to, like, for example, just pull up a web page and refresh the numbers automatically, internal web page. But because Raspberry Pis are only $35, they just get a little case from, stick them to the back of the TVs, and now the TVs have dashboards to give them statistics. And because they're Linux running Raspberry Pi, they can customize whatever they want to be output to the screen.
Right. Or they could just have Chromium open full screen and boot to their web page, and then blam, you got your dashboard.
Is a Raspberry this is going to really reveal. This will really reveal. I've given hints of my ignorance in the past, but this will really reveal it. Are there wireless? Does Raspberry Pi have a wireless capability?
Yes, and Bluetooth.
The new version Pi 3 has built-in Wi-Fi and built-in Bluetooth.
All right. I'll see you guys. I'm going to Microsoft.
Yeah. And it still has four USB ports.
You're sitting there going, it's $35? It is.
Yeah.
Wow. I think it's still 100 meg NIC on it, right? Or did they go? No. They haven't gotten gigabit yet.
You can't. The problem is gigabit wouldn't help any.
Right. They'd have to have a separate bus on there.
The bus isn't fast enough to handle it.
But then anything it interacts with isn't fast enough anyway. Right. So.
But they're really nice. I mean, I run my emulators.
I'm putting my Christmas list together.
Yeah,
they're fun, and there's many projects that are pre-built. You can download for it. You just type in Raspberry Pi project. And there's a lot of fun things people have done.
And so to get the Raspberry Pi 3 up and running, all I need is just the power source, the card with the OS on it, and a monitor.
Yep,
and a case
and a keyboard.
Yeah,
I mean, you know that stuff.
Well, to get it connected to the Wi-Fi for the first time, you need a keyboard and mouse. Uh-huh. But other than that, you turn on VNC and then you can connect to it remotely from your other PC or probably from your phone if you can run Java from your phone.
Oh, and a fun note. So
I keep wanting to get away from my desk. This sounds like something I'll be wanting to.
We took the kids a laser tag and I couldn't help but stare at the row of Raspberry Pis that counted our laser tag scores.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Fun. That's cool.
You should get a picture of that.
Yeah, I got a good picture. I've seen some of them. They have it running the little media stuff, and it runs all the score counters. So it's some custom written Raspberry Pi thing. I was like, nice. Novel.
Yeah, that's cool.
All right. So what's our next feedback?
I don't see anything else from the last couple of weeks. I'm going back since you guys didn't see anything previously.
Yeah, we didn't catch anything.
I seen the Susie one. I figured I'd let you address that, and I would address the Pine book. So
there's actually one more that came through, was sent directly to me. Kevin O'Brien. He is
starting the show, Kevin.
Yeah. He's starting to prep for PenguinCon, which is 6 months away now, just under 6 months now.
Yeah.
And he wants to come on and talk about PenguinCon because he's the tech chair.
Yeah. All right.
We'd love him to.
Yep.
Yeah. So we just have to set up a schedule and
would he'd do it remotely or would he?
We'll ask.
I'd give him the option.
Yeah, we'll give him the option, but he lives really close to here.
He lives north of Ann Arbor.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not real far.
Right.
He's retired.
Tom has the tailored to Royal Oak perspective, so it's not any further than you drive.
It's not any further than I drive. Yeah. I mean, he could just take 696 and fly here. So.
Yeah.
And we like Kevin. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right.
Boy, I tell you, it's just amazing. It's, it'll be here in no time.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Distro Fever, where we cover the latest hot distro releases and news.
Woo!
All right.
I just feel like,
excitement. Yeah, excitement. Let's go.
Yeah.
So we see we have a new Peppermint distribution.
Yes, we do. I noted that, and I'm going to download it, actually. Hey, by the way, too, is Magia? I don't have DistroWatch open, but is Magia still at the top of the list?
It's second from top. There's now Sparky is on.
Oh, Sparky came out. Yep. Yes. Sparky Linux. You know what they did? I reviewed that a while back, but this release, they replaced. Have you ever heard of the web browser NetSurf? I had not either. apparently no one else did because it was replaced with Midori on the minimal GUI edition. So. I guess there was some kind of a problem with the HTTPS protocol. Not too easy for me to say. And then the only other issue they had with it is that it does not play well with VirtualBox, but it works fine inside VMware workstation. So.
All right.
I thought that's kind of odd, but yeah. So, that was Sparky. But anyway, getting to Magia, we used to talk about Magia quite a bit. Few years ago, remember that?
Right. Yeah, they were always on top of the list.
I think Matt kind of did, but yeah, Magia. Their last production release, I kind of thought they had fallen off the face of the earth. Their last production release was over a year and a half ago, but they've just come out with 5.1? What was it?
Yes, 5.1.
Yeah, so good for them.
Yeah.
So that kind of caught my eye, only because Magia, when I hear the word Magia, just kind of brings back memories.
Right.
FreeNAS has the 10 Beta 2. they're getting closer to release. They claim this has now reached feature parity with the 9.1 series, which is the current stable. Mm-hmm. And that's what we run is the 9.1. And it's I'm really excited for 10 because it's a complete code rewrite. They did a huge revamp on the project. So they're adding a ton of features into it.
Yeah, and that's the FreeBSD-based system, yes. Right? Now, here's my question for you. When something new like that, because you use it in kind of production environment, what is the time frame usually between something being released like that and you feeling, quote-unquote, comfortable?
It depends if they have an upgrade path, and I'm not sure they will on this one. So this may take me a little while to switch over because we've done a lot of customization, and we run several virtual machines on it, and they change the entire virtual environment on it.
Yeah. Ooh.
So that means I need to build a test lab.
That means and work
see.
For Tom.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and exciting work. What they did is when with changing that virtual environment, and I don't know if you just said this a second ago, but they changed out the whole plugin structure.
Yes.
So in the back end of the, all the plugins are new and updated. And for if I remember hearing right, the current install, a lot of those plugins are broken because of they're in the process of changing all these.
So the I have to make sure that the ones I use work properly.
Okay. Right.
So that's a.
Otherwise, it'll be a full wipe and reload, and you have to back up all those VMs or jails or whatever you have set up.
Yeah, and I'm using the jail system in the 9.1. So.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're gonna be binary or directly compatible with 10.
Okay.
So I kind of that's kind of what I got to look at. But we've narrowed it down. We're down to really, I think, only one primary thing we run on it, though. It's our imaging server. So we just have to ask ourselves, do we need the imaging server on there, or do I spin up another virtual machine in my standard virtual stack of running that? Right. We've always run it on the FreeNAS box because the FreeNAS box is so fast, and we need the images to shoot fast. So it's going to be a fun project. It'll be something a lot of people have asked me if I want to do more documentation on FreeNAS. And the reason I'm not right now is because 10's coming out. So when we do 10, and I'll probably go to it fairly quickly, I'll also do an entire in-depth on how it works.
All right.
Because there's already a bunch of people who have done the 9 series on it. And I've done my parts, you know, with the encryption and everything. So.
All right.
Okay, so what else we got on there? Hey, did you see Fedora?
Yeah, I was going to say Fedora 25 Fedora. Is out.
Hey, yeah, it's Fedora is near and dear to my heart. No, actually, it's their installer. but what I didn't realize until I actually went out to their site to take a look. You know, they've got Fedora Server, which is no surprise because it's, you know, based on the very trusty and reliable Red Hat. And they have Fedora Workstation, of course, which is the desktop version. But they also have Fedora Atomic. Are you familiar with that?
No. Is that like a stripped-down version?
Yeah, very granular. Just a few atoms. No, it's for hosting. So there's kind of a very stripped-down basic that then connects to an EC – or it's a Amazon – you know, the Amazon Public Cloud EC2. So – yeah, so there's that version, and I wasn't even aware of it. So I just wanted to give a little call out for that.
It reminds me of like the Ubuntu Juice, or JOS, you know, just the operating system.
JOS.
Oh, okay.
I think they called it Juice, but it was JOS.
Okay.
Yeah, where it's just the operating system, and then anything you want, you have to install
just
it on top.
Operating system.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you have to install anything on top of that. And that's what it sounds like this was. So there's no other applications with it other than you can connect to it through SSH or something. And then you have to install Apache or GUI or anything else you want on top of that.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. But the other thing, too, is while I was looking at Fedora, there's a website called Hectic Geek, and they did a review of Fedora 25. And they did a little benchmark as far as booting, and what he said is that Fedora 25 is the slowest compared to – he took Ubuntu 16.10 and then Ubuntu GNOME 16.10, and because, you know, Fedora's default desktop is GNOME. And he said that Fedora 25 is the slowest, and it comes in at anywhere between 30% and 39% on, he calls them rotational disks. So obviously he was looking at solid state versus, you know, your traditional hard drive. And Ubuntu 16.10 was 14.2, and Ubuntu GNOME was 24.4. So it was 30% to 39%. Tony, you're gonna.
These
you're going to debunk my claim?
No. I completely agree with them. I just I don't think they're really that relevant. Now, I think if you're going to be comparing
well,
two
distros. Well, if you're talking about
distros,
20 seconds to 23 seconds or, yeah.
Yeah, what's 30% of 20 seconds is 6 seconds. So one thing takes 20 seconds, one takes 26 seconds to boot. You know, on a laptop, that's still pretty quick. It's not like I have to go back get a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, I think these kind of benchmarks are a good thing to have. Because if you're going to be – if everything else is equal, mm-hmm. then you need something to be able to compare them by. Mm-hmm. You know, otherwise, what's the difference between them? And
well, here's what he said about this, too. He said – this was a review of Fedora 25. He said the last version of Fedora that he reviewed was 23, and he actually deliberately skipped reviewing Fedora 24 because he was angry at him. Mm-hmm. And he said the main reason is that starting with Fedora 22 – are you still with me?
Yeah.
Kind of jumping back and forth here. He said that the Fedora developers, they decided to abandon a core utility called systemd-readahead, which apparently caches information as far as speeding up. It caches it so that it can get to it more quickly to facilitate a faster boot up. And I guess it was deprecated or something, so they went away with it. And he just thought that was not the thing to do because it then really slowed it down in his mind. So anyway, So wow, that was a lot of talk about. That was almost a distro review.
Right.
But anyway, that was what I saw in Fedora, and I thought it was kind of interesting. So
all right.
Yeah, but interestingly enough, he complained about the installer.
But you know what thing that Fedora had been railed on in the past is
the partitioning?
Is they'd set a date for release and then they have to push it back and push it back and push it back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ubuntu's always been nice because we at least have nailed down the month they're always going to release.
They should put up a release window where you've got a range.
Right.
So that
But I agree with their philosophy is that they don't want to release something that's half broken or a half not working.
I agree
whatever.
With that, but they shouldn't pinpoint a date.
Exactly. Yep. So. What Linux Mint is doing on their next update is mm-hmm. they're saying it's sometime coming back. We were hoping to
sometime
get it out
next
in
year.
November. No, they were hoping to get out in November, but mm-hmm. maybe it'll be in December. And 2 days ago on the 1st, they had their first development release. So 18.1 beta mm-hmm. was had a release.
Okay.
And it has the updated version of Cinnamon in it and a couple other things. The on-screen displays are updated. X-Player video and can now blink out the monitors.
Okay.
Blah, 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 or does not.
Okay.
When you're watching. Yeah. So, look forward to that. And, you know, I run Mint on all my stuff. So
yeah, I know you're
looking
minty.
Forward to the update. Yeah.
You love that minty goodness.
I do. It's, you know, I think just Cinnamon is the best thing. I like it.
Okay. Kitty. Hey, speaking of that, I did two donations. And I like to talk about this because I'd like people to start thinking about doing this. I did donate to the KDE Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
I sent them 25 euros, which was $27 and some cents. We're practically parity with the euro. And then I also donated to, have you gone to Wikipedia in the last week or two?
Yeah.
You know, they have that big, donate. So I donated to them too because I just think they do a good service
they
and I use it. So what I wish would happen is that after you donate, I wish that thing would go away because every time I go there, it comes up again. It's like, stop.
Right.
All right. So I have a couple of other distros that I'm feverish about.
All right.
shall I mention them?
Yeah.
All right. If you'd said no, I don't know what I would have done. All right. It is Zentiol Linux. Now, that's the that's a server. That's the server version. And what I wanted to mention is that for anybody who is using Zentiol 4.x, which is based on Ubuntu 14.04, if you want to upgrade to 5, they're saying it's a big step, and they're still evaluating carefully what the best procedure is. So apparently they're going to be coming out with an update on that as far as the best upgrade path for those folks that are on 4X, which is probably a whole bunch of people since this is 5. And they'll be releasing that information sometime in the next week or so.
Hmm.
So there you go. So that's what I was excited about in this list.
All right. That's all I had.
About it.
Yeah. Which is much better. Last week, we were like, nothing's exciting in the distro list.
I felt
we made up for it.
I felt guilty about that.
Yeah, we looked at it and we said, meh.
Especially those people who said this was our favorite. This is the favorite podcast. I thought, we got to step up our game.
Step up our game.
That's right. So I did. Hey, and speaking of that, you saw Alt Linux on the list.
I saw it on the list. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you know that they've got actually several spins of Alt Linux, and one of them is called Informica. It's all a matter of the accent.
Yeah.
And that's for schools. So I was completely unaware of that.
What's their base out of? Where are they based out of?
Russia.
Oh, okay.
Ooh. Hey, I'm popular in Russia, so it's cool.
Are you really?
Yes. My PF Sense videos get to hunt Russia. Did you know the U.S. only has 38% of the views on that?
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Huh.
Well, actually, it makes sense.
There's about three jokes there, but
it makes sense to me because of all the people being scared about, you know,
Snowden.
Production firewalls now or commercial that are closed.
Sure.
They don't know what kind of back door or if the NSA has something in there.
Well, you'd almost have to run Wireshark or some network sniffer just to see where stuff's going.
Right.
It's a lot of work. So, yeah, because there's a way you can find out where your videos are embedded. I'm embedded in all kinds of Russian hacker forums.
Wow.
So that makes me excited.
Good job.
Good job.
I'm sure one of those three-letter organizations knows about you, too.
I made the list as soon as I started using Linux.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Oh, my God. And I know him, so oh, my God. Mm-hmm. No. Well, that's pretty interesting, Tom. Yeah. But, you know, yeah, it does make sense why that would be the case.
Yeah, so they want something that's open source or at least something you can look through and vet.
I'm going to retweet your video links.
You have a Twitter account now?
Yeah, I've had one since 2009, but I finally got really active. And you know, I like to post little humorous comments about things.
What's your at?
At Linux Girl.
Yeah.
Yeah, LinuxGrrl. Just a little caveat. I have a few political things out there, so you might not agree with my politics, but
I'm
a nice person. I do post little notes out there. I have like 30 followers, so.
All right.
But
31, I'll find you.
But you know, I've decided the way you build your follower base is if you're following somebody very well known, what you do is in replies, you reply and then you also add a little something just to kind of show what you do.
Yeah.
And then people
they'll start following you.
They'll start following you.
Yep.
So that's kind of what I did.
Now you have 32 followers.
Cool, Tony. I'm going to follow you then.
All right. I'm at TBemis. I don't tweet much. But
you should, though. And Tom, you are on Twitter, aren't you?
Yep.
Or no? Yeah? All right. At Tim Lawrence? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tom Lawrence. Everything starts at my website. Go to my website, lawrencesystems.com, and you can find my YouTube, my Twitter. We have...
I'll be there.
I think that's where my Twitter links to.
All right, you guys. All right.
All right.
Cool.
All right, cool.
All right, so that's, I guess that's, what were we on? Distro fever.
Distro fever.
Okay.
All right, going on.
Tech news and views.
Yes.
Tech news.
Tech news.
And views, because we have a lot of views.
Mm.
Well, I think we do anyway. So, all right, so anybody? Anybody?
Want me to start?
Oh, you can. Or I can just talk about... go ahead, Tom. I just opened my document. I did prepare something, but...
Oh, that's good. All right. It's great when we're prepared for the show.
As opposed to not preparing anything.
We wing it. We're looking up the news and giving it to you live.
Yeah. Because
we didn't prepare. So, Lutris, LUTRAS, and you can find it at lutris.net. Mm-hmm. It is a open source kind of like a Steam client. So if you're not familiar with the Linux in the gaming world, Steam is kind of a front end, so you can easily get and manage games. Lutris is a up and coming open source project that gives you now Steam does work on Linux, but it's fraught with problems. But this is combining several different things all together to make it easier to download games and set up a nice interface. One of the things they did was accomplish good 4K support, which I noticed that was right at the top. There's a lot of people wanting to run a high-end machine. Apparently Steam, the Linux version, needs some love because it doesn't work well at 4K and some other issues. But it's a pretty neat project, and it seems to be getting a lot of popularity. So it makes it easier to load games on Linux, which is kind of the big hang-up for a lot of people. Even myself building a gaming system, I have to run Windows on it because the games my kids want just don't. And the fact that I tried setting up Steam on it and it was mission impossible. It's all the little bugs I have setting up Steam on a Linux box. I have an incompatible graphics card. The amount of libraries I would have to change to make it work. Also, if anything updates, it breaks again. So that's a whole other story.
Your new video card?
Well, the new one has a different problem. The new, because it's so new, it's only been out for a few months. The driver support, once again, is bad for Linux. I had trouble. We can't even get Ubuntu to boot on a new Intel machine because of a litany of problems.
Well, and what chip is that?
I have the new Intel i5. It's not actually the processor. It comes down to the motherboard and the fact that I used the MPCI slot on there. There's just a ton of Linux issues with it. And the video card, we had to pass all kinds of kernel parameters to even get it to boot Linux.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just they're not well supported. It's new high-end gaming hardware.
That's what happens.
That happens with any new hardware. It takes time before people can debug it and get it working.
Yeah. Also, in people who have gotten it working, it looks like there's not a way to take full advantage of the card. So why would you buy a $450 gaming card, video card, when you can't use it in Linux? So Anyways, so this is another fun little project. It's called Neutralize Me Firmware on Sandy Bridge and Ivy Bridge Platforms. Now, what that is was some people had growing concerns of the network interface cards that are on Intel high-end boards that you can't disable. Matter of fact, there's an operating system for what they call out-of-band management. And what that means
out of what?
Out of band management.
Oh, out of band, okay.
Yeah, and what this allows you to do is when the computer's having a major issue, server, you can log into it. And Tony probably sees some of this, probably has some of this equipment where he works. It's so you can manage it. But the problem is it's all proprietary and closed source and really hard to tell what it all can do. It's also a potential attack vector. Well, someone made, and this will all be a link in the show notes, a way to disable that. So you can use these really high-quality motherboards and disable the mystery box that runs on the network interface card.
Oh, really?
Because it runs in parallel to your network. So even though you have an OS running, it has its own sub OS that attaches to the network. It's really weird, but it's a growing concern because you can get these server boards for really inexpensive, and almost all of them are these Intel ones, and all of them come with this special management tool on there. So people going, I really want to run this hardware. It's really good Linux compatible. Matter of fact, a lot of them are Linux boxes because they're in data centers and things like that, but you have this mystery box that runs within your box that you can't do. So someone made a way to do it, and it's really it's a neat project to follow how they did it, how they used not a Raspberry Pi, what's the other one, the BeagleBone, to use it as a programming device to program it. It's a cool project too. So it's not just interesting that they did it. It's an interesting project. So time is running out for NTP.
Hold on, Tom. Oh, there we go. I found a new bug with, not new. I'm sure people know about it for a long time, but, the new YouTube live video streaming is once you hit the 1 hour mark,
It stops.
Oh.
So I had to kill our Jitsi, or maybe it's Jitsi that does it, but I had to kill the Jitsi plugin or tab, relaunch it and tell it to start the live again.
That's
so
weird.
We're back in live now, but
For
the last.
How many listeners or how many viewers do we have?
We have two right now. Wow. Hey, two viewers.
All right.
Hey.
Anyway, okay, now
we'll
you can
try not to let you down.
Right.
So I have an article. It turns out the NTP project has not a maintainer group, but a maintainer in the singular. And apparently.
And he's poor?
Yeah. And he's busy. And there's apparently
he's not getting paid.
Yeah. Nobody's putting time into this project.
Right.
Yeah.
How many puns can we come up with in a few minutes?
Yeah.
What was that other one you had earlier?
Time is running out.
Time is running out. Yeah. So that's a project that needs some love. So it looks like – the good news is because
we're seeing some overclocking.
Get them overclocked computer. There we go.
Okay.
So you can work faster. Speed up time. So obviously NTP is really important because we need to know what time it is. And it's really important for VPNs and all kinds of other things that we use on the internet to know what time it is. And well, this has got problems. It's not funded well. It's just like the OpenSSL project. It's like we had to shed some light on it. Because when OpenSSL, they found hacks, they're like, how could this happen? They're like, well, you don't have anyone, you know, maintaining it. That's how. So that's getting some love.
Yeah.
HTOP explained in detail. And if you're not familiar with
– oh.
Yeah.
I use HTOP a lot.
HTOP is cool.
I love HTOP. Yeah.
So if you're not familiar with HTOP, HTOP is an alternate to TOP. It's a much more detailed – actually, I use it a lot when I'm tracing out efficiency of my computer, especially with Kden Live and the multiprocessor issues and rendering. But what it – HTOP also does, instead of TOP where it just shows you processes, it's interactive. So someone made an entire detailed of how to use it to do stack tracing and all kinds of other things to help track down processes in your computer.
Yeah, they just – I think they just upgraded HTOP or, you know, came out with a new version of it within the last year. And it – yeah, it was pretty impressive. I use it to tell me how much CPU space that Firefox is using.
Yes. And it's,
oh my God! Some of those, you know,
it's huge.
So, oh, and then you take a look at, if you've ever looked at Chrome or looked at the Chrome processes when Chrome is up and running, there are so many Chrome processes listed there, and I think it's because Google tends to sandbox stuff.
That's exactly why,
which is for security purposes, and that's good. But yeah, it was really eye opening when I first started looking at it.
Yeah, and so it's definitely really interesting. But I thought it was cool that there's a very breakdown detail to what everything means in there, and I'll put that in the show notes. But it's a nice link to that, so you can really expand on it. And if you're into how the Linux kernel works, it becomes very helpful for you because you can understand how something like Chrome splits off so many fork device, so many fork processes for sandboxing. So
and it does a real time. It gives you a real-time view of your processors. Your it was really cool to go up there, and you can just see things changing for the for your processors.
I really like it because even though I have like process monitor, which draws pretty graphs in the GUI, the HTOP in a command line draws it all in ncurses, and it looks great. Though they did such a great job of it's really easy to read. It's color coded. It's ASCII art, but I like it. Hey, I use it all the time.
Hey, speaking of ASCII art. They just came out with a new version of NeoFetch. You ever heard of NeoFetch?
I have not.
NeoFetch is, and it's easily installable because I installed it and tried it. what it does, it's a CLI tool for providing you with your system information.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and you can just do apt-get install NeoFetch, and what it will do is paint a nice ASCII art logo of whatever operating, whatever Linux flavor you're using, and then it will give you all the helpful information about your system. You know, as far as hang
that's
on a
cool.
second here. Yeah, and I what did I do with it? Oh, here we go. I thought I put a screenshot in here, but apparently I didn't. But anyway, yeah, it's pretty cool. So it gives you just a quick readout.
I'll add that to my list. I've been adding to my YouTube channel like individual. Tools in command line tools in Linux. I'm doing a series of short videos. So when people search for things, they go, how do I use Dig to sort out DNS problems? Or how do I use, because someone asked me how I use the bandwidth testing, which is iperf, which is a built in Linux utility, which is actually cross platform. I learned as I did the review for Windows. But that's how we do all the bandwidth testing when we do things like the Bridge project. And we want to make sure what is the bandwidth of an installed Wi-Fi. And we just set a unit Linux box at each one, which was just a couple of Linux laptops for us. And away we go.
Yeah, it tells you how many packages you've got installed.
Yep.
Cool. Yeah, what your shell.
I'll add that
kernel.
To my stuff I'm going to review list. That's really cool.
Desktop environment, the window manager you're using. Yeah, a bunch of stuff.
What's the tool again?
NeoFetch.
It's called NeoFetch.
N-E-O. Yep.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, speaking of retro sounding things, there was a Kickstarter project that I signed up for. I might have mentioned this months and months ago, and it's for this Arduino based clock called the Volt. And what's really cool about it is that this clock looks very retro, and you could select kind of a combination of wood and front panel for the clock. The clock is like, it's one of those analog meter type clocks. It's like a windshield washer. So what it does is the hours will slowly advance from, left to right as the meter, the view meter, whatever.
So turns. Instead of being a round clock, it's
two
it's
of them. One is for hours and one is for minutes.
That's cool.
So, I haven't gotten it yet. It's supposed to ship this month. But I'm thinking maybe of bringing it in.
Is it just an LCD display with that?
No,
or it's
no,
actual
these are actual.
Mechanical?
Yeah, these are actual.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah. So, anyway, so it's kind of cool. A guy in Canada did it. So.
That's pretty
Sorry,
cool.
Tom, I didn't mean to hijack your new segment there. So what else you got?
What else I got? If you haven't seen the UK Snooper Trucker Past.
If you haven't seen it.
So anyways, the UK is now, they've gone off the deep end. They've gone, if you've ever seen that movie V, where they go total totalitarian, they now want all the internet providers to provide history of everybody's internet.
Was it for the last 30 days?
Yeah, I think it's a 30-day retention. They have some retention rules. I don't remember the details.
I want to say it was longer than that.
I think it's longer than 30, though. One, it puts a lot of onus on the companies to try to capture that much data. What do you do with it all? And plus, it's a huge privacy concern because now you can know where everyone's surfing the web. They also have some, and I'm not clear on exactly how it would work, and of course, because it doesn't work in the real world, this only works in the legislative world. They want a backdoor to all encryption. So they want people to be able to provide encryption keys so later things could be decrypted upon request from the government. And obviously the government holding all the encryption keys or people holding onto encryption keys is just a bad idea because it's a spot for hackers to attack. And the fact that they shouldn't be looking at our internet, that's the bigger issue. So that really makes the UK – we didn't think anything like that would pass, but they did Brexit, so now they did this. They're like, oh, yeah, we're going to double down on this bad idea thing.
Well
– Right.
Yeah, you know, I think they thought it was a good idea, but it turned out that nobody, there was no real plan in place to affect this exit from the European Union. I think they're certainly working on it now. It's going to be interesting to see over the next 6 to 12 months what really happens.
Yeah, and there's also some talk that they may just shelf it because once they leave, a lot of companies are based in London, like Google, and that's because that's their launch pad for their European market. They have to be based in a European Union place. And they've chose – a lot of large U.S. companies have chose England because, well, they speak a very close version of our language. Close enough that it's easy.
They have that funny accent.
They do. I like their accent.
I do too. I have friends over in England.
I like when they narrate things.
I might be going to England in the spring.
Oh, cool.
So
– But make sure you hide your internet, and VPNs will be illegal when you go. So just throw it out there.
Yeah, no, but I do have Opera VPN on my phone.
Oh, there you go.
So
interesting thing. So if you don't know who he is, look up Pharma Boy, Sicrelli, the guy
Pharmaceuticals.
Yes. Anyways, he's a very controversial figure because, well, he's just one of the most hated people.
Because he's a jackwad.
Yeah, that's another topic. But high school students open sourced his HIV drug to give it away and released all the officers.
When did that come out?
Yesterday.
Wow, I did not even see that.
Yes. So they
And I subscribed to the New York Times online. I didn't see that.
You got to subscribe to Engadget then because that's where the article link is. But this brings up something interesting to me, and I didn't think as much about this until going through and reading some of this, is open sourcing drugs kind of makes sense when you talk about things that are for the greater good and understanding what chemicals go in them. And this is kind of a neat thing they did here. So it's just it's open source in a different way, so it relates to us because it's open source. But I thought it was something novel to think about because we talk about opening things up a lot. So.
Yep. Right. And next up is the EpiPen then.
Yeah. They actually did that in Canada already.
Did they?
Yeah, that was last week.
Man, yeah, am I behind or what?
Yeah. So Mycroft, we've talked about them when they first came out a while ago. That is because we still don't know the source of their name. We guessed a lot as Sherlock Holmes' brother. But that is the open source version of the Amazon Echo / Google Home where you can just talk to a device, but it's actually open source.
Where a device listens to you?
Yeah.
You have to keep that in mind all the time.
They open sourced all the hardware they use for it. So now the project is going to get a bigger boost because now people can completely build everything themselves because they open source all the hardware along with the software.
Oh.
So there's going to be some more projects on there. I think I've seen some people with some demos of some integration with Ubuntu and things like that, like you're running your own voice server. So we're going to see a lot more of that, which is really cool because I kind of like the idea of voice commands. I'm not sure I like the idea of a closed source system that, like you said, you don't know what it's really doing. An open source one, at least I could say, hey, because I have a server, so I could set it up in my house to control something and it would be completely under my control.
Because it's listening all the time.
It's scary. And in the more amusing news, there's a YouTube video you can find. A guy set his calendar in Google to say, what's my what's my agenda, Alexa? And so Alexa asked his Google, they got him talking to each other. It says, what's in the agenda for today? And it says, because Alexa asked Google, and then Google's response was, okay, Alexa, what's in my agenda? And they just went back and forth talking to each other in an infinite loop. And it's the funniest thing to watch.
These.
Yeah, he just put the calendar events for each one in the agenda, asking the other one what the agenda is. So it goes in an infinite loop of funny.
That did crack me up.
Last thing in my news is Riot releases end-to-end encryption. If you're not familiar with Riot, it had a weird name before, but Riot is a Slack alternative.
I'm familiar with Riot.
But. Yeah. It's a riot.im. It's a project where it's an open source alternative to Slack. If you're not familiar with Slack, Slack's one of those companies that came out of nowhere and filled in a niche we didn't know we needed for inter-office communications and business. We actually are Slack users at my office. Okay. I've been looking at the open source alternatives.
So it's kind of like text, maybe, was it texting, chatting clients between coworkers?
This is what makes me angry. Slack's worth like so many $1 billion, right? They turned down an offer from, I think it was Microsoft, one of the big guys, to buy them for over $1 billion. When you look at Slack, this is what it is. And when I first started, I said, this makes me angry that I didn't come up with this idea.
They should have named the website slack.er.
Yeah, Slacker. That would be great. Slack is IRC. It works like IRC. It works with channels like IRC. It uses IRC commands.
I was going to say, it's just like IRC, but with a lot of bells and whistles on top.
A lot of bells and whistles on top. And a somewhat open platform.
Can it do video?
No. You can. It doesn't know.
I don't think so.
It's made to be like a chat. And what's kept me from someone I've been messaged before about, like, why aren't you using the open source one, Tom? And I'm like, one of my problems is we actually use Slack on the phone most of the time. And the phone project, I haven't really done much testing, but some of the reviews were kind of poor on it. And this is a problem with a lot of open source projects. The apps aren't well coded. So
that was funny that you just said that. The problem with a lot of open source projects is the apps are not well coded.
Yes, when it comes to the phone apps.
Oh, okay, I got you.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. That makes it different.
And because we use Slack so much on my phone as a communications tool between all my employees, the phone tool for Slack doesn't seem to use any battery, and that's what the complaint is. It just either doesn't get the message or it drains your entire battery. So of course, it defeats the purpose of having it, because your communication device goes down, and then I'm hoping it gets there.
Okay.
So that's what I got for the news. Who else has got something? Oh, we can all talk about the California transit hack. San Francisco transit hack. So
free rides for everyone.
Everyone gets a free ride except for the hackers. They didn't get their money. They were hacked. They got cryptoed. CryptoLocker, apparently they found a fault in a Java library, and that was their in to get into their network. Some of the details is less relevant. What is relevant is how they handled it. So they knew they got owned by this company, and instead of keeping the system going, they actually made all the transit free while they audited their system to bring it back up, which I thought was really good. That's definitely to me a better approach.
Yeah, instead of stopping transit.
Well, you don't want to stop it, and you don't want to keep charging credit cards. So it did cost them a lot of money to do this, but it did save them NPR.
But think about this. What they should really do is just say that was part of their advertising budget, because it probably bought them a lot of goodwill because they came right out right away and took care of it.
They'll write it off in some manner.
Yeah.
Right.
They're okay.
Yeah. So it sounded like it was overall, I don't have every detail, and you can.
I did that just.
But it's still novel, and of course, it's still scary that these large companies are getting hacked, meaning that they don't have some. They're obviously missing some levels of security, or why wasn't this patched? That's always a bigger question you need to ask. Is how'd they get in here? We need that. So I'm hoping they have even more detailed debriefings, because as we learn from. As embarrassing it is to say that you got breached, it's a good learning opportunity for the rest of us. So I'm going, can we not make that mistake? So,
yeah.
All right, what do you got, Tony?
I found a few things security related. One was on this last week's Security Now podcast, and he was talking about the new federal guidelines to seek to lock out apps on drivers' phones.
Yeah.
So I actually haven't listened to this last week's episode, but I was looking at their notes, and this looks interesting. So it looks like that when you're driving, the federal guidelines wants all the carriers to make sure your phone gets locked out so you're not being distracted while you're driving.
Speaking of that, did you see the – this was a news item that just came out yesterday about the kid in Rhode Island who live-streamed himself on Facebook going 104 miles an hour.
Really?
In and out of traffic. Yeah, he hit a dump truck, I think, and that stopped him.
Jeez.
Yeah, abruptly.
Sorry, Tony.
Actually, I didn't see that. But that,
I mean, that's very apropos to your topic.
Yeah, there's so many people that are
idiots,
irresponsible, right, and idiots, and they shouldn't be doing things like that. So I can see where something like this is good, but then at the same time, you know, you get an unlocked phone or root your phone, and then you can just disable whatever they're trying to do anyways.
And it's also a guideline that they just – what they want is, let's say, your data feed or apps like Twitter or Facebook, things that will come up with notifications. And the guideline says if those notifications come up, they shouldn't come up while you're driving. Like, just ignore them.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of like a disabled data on these – any apps that have pop-ups on there while you're driving. Because you don't want to disable data per se because you have a lot of people who stream music or podcasts via there, which is fine because – that's what I do.
Or even driving directions.
Yeah, or driving directions and things like that. But you don't need – I don't need Facebook Messenger turned on while I'm driving and things like that.
Right.
So I've always wanted an app, and maybe someone can make this, that just turns off people's phone when the light turns green. So they know it's green.
Right.
Or electrocutes them. I'd be fine with that too. When it turns green and they don't go, I just want them to get a little zap. A little zap.
So I don't they know, Tony. You're that sounded like a big zap over there, Tony.
Yeah. Right. My goal is to get them to go when the light turns green because they sit through a lot of green lights.
You know, a built-in taser in the seat.
Yeah.
That doesn't deliver 50,000 volts, maybe 5,000.
It's maddening. There's two people the other day. Both of them sat through half a green light because they were both waiting for the other one to go, I guess, and both playing in their phones.
Well, they were probably looking. Right. Yeah. Here's what they do is that they're on their phone and out of the corner of their eye, the peripheral vision,
they figure for the other car.
If that car goes, then I know it's green and I'm going too and vice versa.
And then you get the blind leading the blinds. They're both on their phone.
Right. Well, the problem by us is that now they've turned the left turn goes first.
Yes.
So somebody's sitting there on their phone and they see the left turn lane go and then they'll start to go and almost cause an accident.
Yeah.
Because the other left turn in front of them are coming toward them.
We need self-driving cars. That's the app we need.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah. But you know what I do is if I happen to pull up next to a car, I can see they're doing something on their phone. I honk my horn. Yeah.
That is real quick. Won't get too deep into it, but it might be something we get into a little deeper with a Fresh Licks episode. GeoHot, the famous hacker, he has a startup called Comet.ai that is a open source version for driving cars because he built that driving car in Ubuntu and made some fame. And now he's open sourcing the entire project, and hopefully people will start using it as a blueprint for building open source, building an open source version of driving cars, which would be really great because that's going to come into a whole nother scary thing. If self-driving cars are all closed source, ouch. We don't know what it's going to do if they find a back door in it and they take my car. Wouldn't that be a fun way to steal a car? It just drives away.
Comes and picks you up.
They hack it and it just left my driveway. It's going without me now.
Well, if we go for like the utopian like Star Wars or Star Trek kind of society, then nobody owns cars. It's just you say I need a car and it shows up and takes you somewhere. And
that's actually I'm pretty cool with that. And then if nobody owns it,
then what does it matter if somebody steals it or somebody uses it?
No one can steal it.
And think about it and how we try to figure out fast ways to get places, but because everybody's on a big mesh grid or something, it will know how to get you there, the quickest way to get you there, which may not be intuitive to you.
Right.
You know, when you think about I don't want to turn here, but hey, the car's turning, so okay.
Until we can figure out, you know, wormhole technology so I can just wormhole my way places.
There you go.
That's the next best thing.
You know,
or even think about traffic jams because everybody's going right in the same direction. Then you start carpooling, you know, saying, oh, these cars are going in the same general direction. Yeah. Then now five people can fit in that one car instead of five different cars on the expressway.
Because that is things humans are not good at.
No. No, but talking about wormholes, I somehow got on this kick yesterday that I wanted to start watching some YouTube videos on the fourth dimension.
Mm.
And how to visualize the fourth dimension, because some people can visualize it. And there, Well, like anyway.
With your third eye? I'm confused what kind of visualization you're looking for.
Perhaps we'll go with the news before we get too far off.
Tony, that was so good with your third eye. No. Anyway, but yeah, so one thing led to another, and 20 minutes later, I still couldn't completely visualize it. But there are some really interesting videos out there about the fourth dimension and how you know people trying to show you the fourth dimension.
All right.
All right. There's a decided lack of interest in pursuing that topic. So anyway, go on, Tony.
What's your next story? The one I have is the FBI gained expanded hacking powers after Congress's attempt to block it fails. So the U.S. Intelligence and law enforcement will be at midnight.
That's an oxymoron. So U.S. 1st. Intelligence? No. All right. Sorry.
Will receive newly expanded surveillance powers following the rule change approved by the Supreme Court earlier this year. And what it was is the Congress had until the end of November, to pass a bill to reverse this rule change, and they failed to do that.
Were they focused on repealing Obamacare for the 90th time?
Yeah. What a lot of this means is they're allowing the FBI to target hacking as a method of intel gathering, so they can pick a target. Now, unfortunately, what happens is that sounds like, okay, sure, we want them to target the one bad guy they're after, but they usually don't target them as the computer. They target the website they go to, which means they compromise everything about a particular site because one target they're looking for is using it, and that is what that expanded powers allows.
And just think about it. They could be going to YouTube videos at Lawrence Tech Lawrence Tech Insane. Systems
yeah.
or
yeah.
yeah
so to, whatever company so, I own.
I try to make that just so smooth and I failed miserably. But anyway, so
but you're right.
Yeah, I mean that's what they're talking about, so they're probably marveling at what an astute business person you are.
Mm.
But I'm trying to end this on a positive note.
No, you're right, though. That's a it's really valid. It becomes because they can target not an entire system and backdoor it and then use it for that. And, of course, then they get to see everything. And that just – it opens up a lot of, a lot of bad ideas.
Right. Yeah. It says the amendment makes explicit that it does not change the traditional rules of the government of probable cause and notice. So there's still going to be the secret FISA courts,
right?
That just approves anything, anyways. But what is it? Doesn't it? Maybe this is not the same one I was thinking of earlier. But is this the rule change that they were talking about? That even if your computer has a virus, then it allows them to hack into your computer to see what it's doing.
Yeah.
And so what stops them from sending out a virus from the government?
That's exactly
to every single computer. And then now they said, well, the rule says we can monitor everybody's computer now.
They can go looking for a crime, and that's where the problem comes in.
Yeah.
Because it's overly broad.
Probable cause.
It becomes very vague. We pretty sure we do it, and then if they see a crime, then we can – yeah.
Well, and probable cause is, you own a gun, and there was a gun shooting 200 miles away, so you could be you could be the perpetrator, you know?
You could be.
So, I mean, it's similar how what they're saying here is – so this –
So it's concerning.
Yeah.
Very. Yeah,
exactly.
I'm just basically concerned about the First Amendment. That's all I got to say about that.
All right. That's all I had so far.
All right. Well, since we have delved into the tinfoil hat zone, there was something that actually initially appeared on Slashdot that caught my eye. And it led back to this article that says security researchers can turn headphones into microphones. Are you aware of this?
I heard about that.
And it has to, and that's actually was proof of concept was done out at Israel's Ben Gurion University. And it allows that the proof of concept showed that you could secretly record conversations even if you didn't have a microphone. The microphone could be unplugged.
Yes. Now, it's really interesting how that works. So, Realtek being one of the more popular audio chipsets, Realtek uses a port system that's really interesting. When you plug in, it detects the device it plugged in and then changes the port to be whatever. With basically, they're using a software-defined audio mapping, which allows them to say, oh, that's a microphone port, but you plugged your headphones in by mistake. And it, to be convenient, they would just switch it to be a headphone port. It's actually kind of novel. I've seen this on a lot of PCs for a while.
It's convenient.
It's convenient. But because of that, that also means all they have to do is go in a software switch and take your headphones. And of course, because there's a standard diaphragm and headphones, and then reverse it, and now they become a listening device. They become a microphone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and they even did the audio charts. They compared the audio charts of the sound run through the microphone and then the sound picked up run through the, coming in through the headphone, and the path or the, the footprint, the sound footprint was remarkably similar.
Really?
So it's, the quality is just as good. So I was thinking, at first I thought, oh, well, then just mute your mic. But I'm thinking, well, that's not going to work because it's coming in, they're picking it up through your headset. So you'd really physically have to unplug your headset.
Well, the problem with that is with laptops, you unplug your headphones, and all of a sudden you have speakers and a microphone already built into the laptop. So you'd have to have a device that doesn't have either physical.
Well, so here's
like a Raspberry Pi doesn't have it built on.
Yeah, so here's what you do is you just you cut your me.
Yeah.
Here's what you do is you cut the cord, the jack on one end, your headphone on the other end, you cut it, and then you splice in a device that can switch it on and off.
Oh, you could do that. Yeah.
You think that would work?
Or, like you said, just cut the end of the cable or the wires off. Like, if you're not listening to anything, you could plug that into your jack,
yeah,
and it goes to nothing.
Yeah. And because it gets all the power and stuff off that jack, the computer doesn't know.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay, we've solved that problem. So much for that news article. That was that got shot down fast.
Right. Go to the dollar store, buy some headphones that you're not going to use.
Yeah.
Cut the headphone part off and just use the jack as an open end. Actually, I've used that for conferences.
Have you?
That where I want to turn my laptop on during the conference, but I don't want it to have it start blaring some kind of music. Mm-hmm. So I'll plug that in, and then all of a sudden I know it's not going to play something out the speakers.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So I have more.
All right.
Whether you want it or not. Actually, I spent a little bit of time out on phosphorus.com. That's not phosphorus, but phosphorus.
Oh,
FOSS.
Okay.
Force.com.
All right.
Yeah, and Christine Hall had, she published an article. Actually, it was a series of little synopses for some recent things. And one of them that kind of caught my eye, besides another nail in the coffin of Flash, that thing, we keep die, and it just keeps lurching along like a zombie. But anyway, there's a new Internet of Things botnet. Apparently there was a reporting on Friday in Ars Technica, and it said that one of the largest CDN service providers, which is Cloudflare, reported that since the day before Thanksgiving, it's been seeing DDoS attacks from a new botnet that's been targeting undisclosed sites located mainly on the West Coast. Like Mirai, which apparently was this other botnet, it's been wreaking havoc since September. So this new botnet is composed primarily of compromised IoT devices.
Mm.
So yeah,
what's
hear
it called
this.
Again? Mirai.
It's like Mirai. I don't think there's a name for it yet.
Is it called the Avalanche?
But they said the Avalanche. Well, no, Avalanche of packets. They said so far these attacks haven't reached the terabyte size that they've seen from Mirai. But they said the average size is about 400 gigabits per second. Give them time to do a little more recruiting after Christmas when all those new batch of IoT devices come online.
Man.
And oh my gosh, we're going to have it all over again.
Jeez.
And so here's my question. Now I'm going to circle way back to the beginning of our podcast.
Yeah.
And I said I got two Rokus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not IoT exactly, is it?
Well, technically it is IoT.
It's behind my...
But you have a legitimate company that's supporting the software behind it.
It's not the IoTs. It's when you have these light bulbs made by some Chinese manufacturer that use an all-winter chip with a backdoor in it that's been unvalidated code. So that's... Yeah, technically this laptop is an IoT. It's an Internet of Things. The Internet really is the largest, most complicated machine humans have ever built.
Okay.
And it's why it's hard to secure.
Yeah. So anyway, that caught my eye and I thought, oh my gosh. So yeah, so after Christmas, it'll be interesting to see what happens because you know, there should be, now I'm not really a proponent of onerous government regulations, but something should be done to force people to change their passwords to passwords that are not easily guessable because that's how these things get started. You know, password 12345 is just not going to work. Well, it is going to work, unfortunately, for the bad guys.
So yeah. It is. They can't just force that alone because then people will complain, I just bought this thing and now it doesn't work because they don't know how to do those things. So what they need to do is have one that will not connect to the internet until you run its little setup software. And in the setup, it won't let you finish a setup unless you choose a password.
Or something, yes.
Yeah. And then once you finish that setup, then it will connect to the internet.
There you go. We've got that solved.
Right. And that, well, that's what they need to do.
Yeah.
Because there's all sorts of things. And then from that, so there's some of these things that are the hacks are because an SSH key was left in there or something. Or they use the same key for every device. Or, you know, all sorts of things. And that's something in the setup process. Mm-hmm. They take the information you give it, you know, the password plus the username plus the whatever, and create a key off of that. And, you know, then yours is individually secured. And there's a lot of little things that can be done. Just a simple process change can make things so much more secure. But people, you know, overseas or wherever, you know, when they're building these, they're trying to make them cheap and fast, and they don't care about security. And that's the problem.
Yes. And by the way, too, I wanted to, you know, I found quite a bit of stuff on Phosphorus. there was something that was published on November 30th about what malware is on your router. Mm-hmm. Now, I found out there, you know, every time I hear the word router, I always think that the network device, you know, that routes traffic.
Right.
Do you know that there's a saw called a router?
Yes.
A saw?
It's not a saw. It's for woodworking.
It's a woodworking device?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I know what a router is.
Yeah, so now I have
two of them, actually. Oh. So total, if you think about how many actual routers, I have probably three electronic routers and two wood routers. Anyway.
Yeah, so anyway, but just talking about these, it goes back to that whole, that Mirai botnet that wreaked its havoc with Brian Krebs and other sites back in September. Apparently, this past week, there were about 1 million customers, I think. Let me go back to my little blurb here. Just shy of 1 million Deutsche Telekom subscribers have been taken offline after the routers were infected with Mirai. This was last week. In today's news, and this is, again, from the 30th, is that the attack has spread to include routers of the UK, Brazil, Iran, Thailand, and elsewhere. So far, they're only attacking routers made by Zyxel, taking advantage of a SOAP vulnerability. But there will be other vulnerabilities to exploit in other routers, webcams, cameras, thermostats, baby monitors, and, ironically, home security devices. I've been thinking about getting the Ring device, you know, that doorbell. So I'm going to have to do some...
They're a solid product.
Okay.
They make a good product. And they're really, really good. They found one security breach in there that was kind of major. It required someone to physically take it apart, and there was a hack they could do to get your wireless password.
Okay.
But it is external in your house, so that's not an impossible task.
Yeah.
Right. And it took them less than 24 hours to patch from disclosure.
So there you go.
They're really good.
And that's good to hear.
Yeah. The Ring is... they're one of the better product companies. They're probably a better example of how IoT should be done, where you have a solid support, but it's also not a $25 device.
No,
and that's part of it.
Multiples of 25.
And something interesting I've seen, and I haven't tested it. The pfSense folks released a $149 version of their. It's on pre-order, but it's $149. They call it the micro firewall. And this is kind of neat because I'm a big advocate for open source firewalls, and that's one of the problems, like with some of these old Zywalls that are broken now. Yeah. There may not be patches. If they're several years old, there's probably no support for them. So people just have these broken devices out there that there's no way to update or patch them. It's where I think there's like Netgate is the hardware manufacturer behind pfSense. This is where some of their devices come in. They're open source. They're not too expensive. You're talking about protecting your home and all the devices within it. So
right. Yeah, people are spending $1,200 on a laptop, or 1600, and but they don't want to spend 150 on the firewall that'll keep them safe.
That's very true. There's a lot of people like that. Because we suggest either these, or even I'm a big fan. The Ubiquiti Edge routers are decent and they have good support too. Even though they're not completely open source, they are based on open source software. But nonetheless, buy a little bit higher quality and have less problems.
Mm-hmm. Are those people who don't pay the little tiny insurance thing, for their phones and
drop it in water.
Drop it in water.
All right.
All right.
Coming in close to the music, or we have more news?
I got one other thing. Hang on a second here. PC Linux OS, that was a Linux distribution that used to release on a fairly regular basis. PC Linux OS magazine's December issue just was released. Now, I went back and looked. PC Linux OS has not had a distro release since 2014, so I'm not sure what's going on there. But their December magazine came out, and they've got the standard gift ideas and that type of thing. So I'm going to go ahead and make a big list. But one thing that they did have in there that caught my eye was an Inkscape tutorial. I like Inkscape. I don't use it a lot, but you can use envelope deformations to manipulate text, so you can get text to conform. Before we went with this very classy logo, Tom, what I wanted to do is get like a mug and then have SMLR to form the mug.
Okay.
With the R at the end would be like the handle of the mug.
Oh. Okay.
Anyway, I didn't get very far with that. but I think this looks much classier. So anyway, but that's if you're interested in that, PC Linux OS magazine. And the only other thing I have is I'm going to zip right into KDE Corner for just a second because, I mentioned earlier I upgraded from the long-term support Kubuntu to 16.10. Anyway, they replaced KDE Snapshot, which I have used for years, with a new screenshot application called Spectacle. That's been out for a while, actually, but I think it finally worked its way into Kubuntu. So I tried to bring up, my little launcher thing, and it wasn't working. I'm thinking, what? Mm. And so I just typed in search for screenshot, and up pops Spectacle. So it's a kind of a souped-up version of it. Works pretty well.
All right.
I'm sure everybody else knows about this but me. I was the last to find out. So there you have it.
All right. Now, I can't remember whether did you do a convention scene last
episode? No, we did not.
No, we did not. And we're not going to do one this scene because it's December, and what I've traditionally found out is that
there's just not conventions.
There's not a lot of conventions. Yeah.
Well,
so
I'm looking right now, and there's three of them.
Oh. Well,
all right, and so
Tony, bring us the convention scene.
Yeah, the Linux convention scene with Tony Bemis.
With Tony Bemis.
All right, one that's running.
He called me right out on air.
One that's running as we speak is the SP Tech Con, which is the that's not. Why is that on this?
So what is it, Tony?
SharePoint Tech.
Oh, there you go, Microsoft. Yeah. That's probably why I didn't have it.
Don't go there.
What's the next one?
No one wants SharePoint.
The Legal Foundation's Legal Summit, or I'm sorry, Linux Foundation Legal Summit in San Francisco, California, and that is next weekend, which is
can I yawn?
12/12/16.
No, I'll sue you,
Linux lawyers.
And
they're so heavily Microsoft.
Right. Mm-hmm. The same weekend in Frankfurt, Germany, is ITTAG, which is 12/12 in Frankfurt, Germany.
Okay.
And ITTAG says it is. Where is the? I don't see. There's no about me. Real quick thing on top of their page.
All right.
If it is, there we go. Translate.
I'll be the Linux convention scene will be coming back to me next time.
Yeah. So. IT Tag.
Well, you started strong, Tony.
Maybe it's not open source. I think it is IT related stuff. I don't know.
This just shows the importance of research before you start blurting out conventions.
You have to make sure there's conventions before you blurt out conventions.
There are a ton that don't pass. Don't pass my threshold because they're.
Yeah.
I didn't know you had a threshold.
Yeah, it has to be an open source.
It's not
one.
Obvious, yeah. It's so it has to have the word Linux or BSD or that type of thing in it. So. Or one of the open source tools.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
The outgoing music for this week's show.
The outgoing music. Now, I grabbed this song without listening to it. Or should we grab one that I know is that I like?
No, I think I'm always for out on
is
the
edge. Is it marked NSFW?
Yeah.
It does not say that.
All right. Well, then it should be good.
But the,
is
the
it a
tags
Christmas,
on it?
Is it a Christmas song?
No. Okay. The tags on it was rock and something else.
Harmonica?
Hard Place?
But it's from a band.
That was good.
There we go.
The band.
Wish I had thought of that.
The song is That Song. And
I'm sorry, the song is what?
That Song.
That's the title of it.
Yeah. THAT space SONG.
I like it.
All right.
Let's roll with it.
It's from, the band is called Not From Georgia.
Well, wait a minute. Is that the state of Georgia or the Georgia, the country of Georgia?
It doesn't say.
Okay.
It's a global community. It could be either one.
That's
it
right.
It could be either one.
Could be 148 other countries.
Let's see. Let's look up a little bit about that. Not from Georgia.
Okay, Tony. The
internet's running a little slow for me right now.
Oh, well, do you need some filler?
I am streaming and I am... Well, I can start playing, but... Well, they are from the USA.
They're from... Okay, yeah. But they're not from Georgia.
But they're not from Georgia.
I wonder where they're from. Perhaps Florida. It could be.
When the dawn it breaks, and the earth it shakes, and the tide changes for the worst, for the worst. When you wake from your sleep with a secret that you keep, maybe then you know what went wrong.
Okay, there we go.
So, yeah, it's not bad. It's
It's not bad. Damned with faint praise.
Right. Their album that it's from is Love and Umbrella. I've no clue what any of that means, but it's kind of a rock song.
Well, on a rainy day, you love your umbrella. That's all I'm going to say.
True that.
So it's a rainy... What was that song? Rainy Night in Georgia? Wait a minute now. Okay, we can build this whole thing here. Rainy Night in Georgia, but they're not from Georgia. But the name of the album is...
Love and Umbrella.
Love and Umbrella. Rainy Night. Okay. There.
All right.
Okay. I don't know what that all means. I do know what it means. It means we're ending the show now.
That's right. It means we're coming to the end. So you have been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This is was episode 217.
Swag Sunday.
Swag Sunday.
Swag. This is Tony Bemis.
Mary Tomich.
And Tom Lawrence.
See you next time.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show@smlr.us or give us a call at 734-258-7009. I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can
bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.